From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Kimberly Adams, correspondent for Marketplace. And we welcome to the panel Ashraf Khalil, Washington reporter for the Associated Press. And our moderator is Paul Brandis, White House correspondent for USA Today and West Wing Reports.
Hello, thank you for joining us. And here are the issues. The United States Congress will open an impeachment inquiry into President Trump. This after an explosive whistleblower report alleging that the president asked the president of Ukraine to look into the family of Joe Biden, that, of course, the former vice president and a leading contender for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. We're going to devote the entire show this week to talking about this, what it means for Mr. Trump, what it means for Democrats, for the 2020 election, and for U.S. foreign policy. So a lot to talk about. And first, let's give our global listeners a definition of what a whistleblower is. A whistleblower is an employee or an official at a company or an organization, in this case, a U.S. government agency, who observed behavior that he or she considers illegal or unethical. The person can report that behavior, in other words, blow the whistle, report that behavior, knowing that he or she will be protected by the law. With that background, Kimberly, tell our listeners what this whistleblower is alleging about President Trump.
The whistleblower is alleging that in a call with the president of the Ukraine, as you said, that President Trump pressured him to do an investigation into President Trump's political opponent, Joe Biden. Specifically, that Joe Biden's son had some business dealings in the Ukraine that President Trump wanted the president of Ukraine to look into. The idea being that the president of the United States would have tied aid, monetary aid that goes to Ukraine, to this investigation. And so it's a very specific charge, because this idea is that the president of the United States unduly used his office to try to basically score points against a political opponent by trying to exert this pressure on the Ukrainian president. Now, the whistleblower specifically said that he wasn't listening to this conversation, but that he heard about this conversation from several different people. And then the president, after a ton of pressure and a ton of media attention, released a rough transcript of the call that pretty much backed up what the whistleblower had to say.
Now, Ashraf, welcome to the show, first of all. The president says that this is all, and this is one of his favorite words that we've heard from him before. He says this is all just a hoax, a witch hunt, another phrase of his. That's what he says this is. What do you think?
Well, definitely the talking points on both sides have already come into focus very quickly. And on the Republican side, on the Trump side, I think they basically have already dismissed this as there's no smoking gun. This is a mistake, an overreach by the Democrats who hate Trump, who hate the Republicans, who are placing the country's interests behind their own interests to destroy the presidency. And as of yesterday, you saw that coming together. They were actually predicting that this would bolster Trump. And they might not be wrong, that this would cause an influx of money, an influx of support. And one of the interesting things I saw yesterday was on Fox News, they played a whole montage of angry Democrats screaming about misuse of impeachment from the Clinton days, you know, with a young Nancy Pelosi, a young Joe Biden saying, you can't use this for political gain. This is going to come back to haunt us. So you're seeing each side's strategy and talking points coming together. On the Democratic side, they've got a lot of digging to do. This is going to drag out. Much of it's going to happen behind closed doors. This is going to last a while,
probably through most of the 2020 election. In fact, now it seems like this Mueller report, which has receded into the rearview mirror, but I think it's worth mentioning that in that report said there was no collusion between either the president and his campaign or the Russians. And now here we have what appears to be, in fact, a clear case of that, if based on what we've seen so far and the whistleblower report. I mean, the president, he admits it, the president of Ukraine, and he said, I need a favor. and Mr. Zelensky, the president, knowing that he needed this military aid, $400 million worth, and the aid was held up. Perhaps he felt like he was being pressured somehow. So the president did not specifically, to use the phrase quid pro quo, there was no explicit tying of this favor to the military aid, but I think you can sort of figure out, connect the dots here.
Right, and in the military aid in particular was being held up for reasons that folks couldn't quite sort out at the time. It was an unusual delay because Congress had already appropriated the funds, it had been approved, and you know, there was even questions from members of Congress back in July when this happened about why this aid was being held up. And so now to see this rough transcript of the call, to hear that the president of the United States was saying, hey, I need this favor, I know you need this aid, we're doing a lot for you, kind of can you do this for me? Ashraf was referencing what happened this week in terms of on Capitol Hill, we had the acting director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, who testified on Capitol Hill here about this whistleblower complaint and why it was delayed in going to Congress. Because this is the other key component of why this became such a big deal this week. The fact that when there is a whistleblower complaint of this nature, it's supposed to go directly to Congress. And it didn't. It was delayed. And that gave the Democrats a lot of fodder for why is this being held
up. And it went to the White House first, in fact.
It went to the White House Office of Legal Counsel first, and then it went to the Justice Department. And Democrats are really latching on to this in particular because in the whistleblower complaint, President Trump, as well as Attorney General Barr, who heads the Department of Justice here, were both implicated in this because not only was there this idea that the president was pressuring the president of Ukraine to take this action, but then that there was an effort by the White House and staff and the Department of Justice to sort of lock this down, to hide this information about what the president had done.
Okay, so that's the background. Now, because of all of this, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, of course, second in line actually for the presidency after Vice President Pence, said she will open this formal impeachment inquiry. Again, we have listeners all over the world here who might not understand how this process of impeachment works here in the United States. In the House of Representatives, which again is controlled by the Democrats, they're going to investigate the president. And as you said, Ashraf, this is going to play out for many, many months. They have to decide whether the president has committed what the Constitution calls high crimes and misdemeanors. And they can define that any way they want, I suppose. If they decide that Trump did commit high crimes and misdemeanors, there is then a trial in the other chamber of Congress, the Senate, which is controlled, of course, by Republicans. It takes a two-thirds vote, in other words, 67 Senate votes, to actually convict the president and remove him from office. This has never happened. So it's a two-step process. He can be impeached. That has happened twice, but no president has ever been actually removed from office. So that is the background. So Ashraf, the question is, I'm going to ask both of you this question, in fact, in your view, and based on what we know now, does this constitute high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, I've always considered that an almost dangerously vague standard to meet. I mean, what does it even mean? But look, American history has taught us, American political history, 90% of the time, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. So you're not going to be able to prove, based on the evidence that we've seen right now, you're not going to be able to nail down the quid pro quo necessarily. There's two major violations here that the Democrats can go for, or that the House can look into. One is with the president asking a foreign leader for a quid pro quo, saying, hey, we do a lot for you, now I'd like you to help me or help us. That happens 10 times a day. The president of Egypt, Sisi, I'm sure there's, you know, regular calls saying, hey, look at all this aid we give you, now we'd like you to help us get people on board for the peace plan. But when you're asking for help with your political situation domestically, that's an abuse of office, potentially. And, you know, that can be proven. The other thing...
So is that a yes, then, in your view?
That is...
I'm trying to pin you down.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you're asking for help to win an election, essentially. Okay. I mean, this isn't the country's business. The other situation is the cover-up.
And the same question to you, Kimberly, based on what we know now. Does this constitute, in your view, high crimes and misdemeanors?
I'm not going to answer that because I don't know. And also, it's not going to matter what I think or what you think about it. It's going to matter what the Senate thinks. Because as you mentioned before, the House of Representatives files the articles of impeachment. Right now, we have an impeachment inquiry. And then after that would come sort of the articles of impeachment. And then the Senate would basically be the jury in that case. And so it's funny, Ashraf was talking about sort of all these video clips of the screaming Democrats when President Bill Clinton was in the process of being impeached back in the day. But also another clip that's been floating around is Senator Lindsey Graham, who's a Republican, and a video of him from that time period saying that, you know, we don't have to prove a crime. It's whatever we think makes you unfit for office. And that's really what it comes down to. It is a political decision. It's not a super clear terminology. It doesn't really matter whether or not the president broke the law. It matters whether or not these people, these elected officials, decide that he's no longer fit for office. And with the Senate the way that we have it, it's unlikely they're going to make that decision.
And there are, in fact, coming back to the House quickly, there are enough Democrats who now say that they are in favor of impeachment. It seems, at least just based on the basic math here, that the president will likely be, I'm sticking my neck out here, but it seems likely that the president at some point down the road will be impeached. But based on the math that we've talked about, a Senate acquittal seems probably pretty certain, I think. Well, let's pause for a short break. We're going to talk about more of this when Issues in the News returns in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Kimberly Adams, correspondent for Marketplace. Ashraf Khalil, reporter for the Associated Press. And our moderator, Paul Brandis, White House correspondent for USA Today and West Wing Reports.
Welcome back. We've been talking about the impeachment inquiry against President Trump that is now underway. Let's turn now to this in the context of the big 2020 presidential election, which is well underway. Now, even without this impeachment inquiry, I think it's fair to say that the president was facing a pretty tough re-election battle. Now, Republicans, Kimberly, say that this is just going to fire up their base. What do you think?
I think that that is definitely possible. I think that Trump's base has proven just in some ways astonishingly resilient to any of these scandals. His core base of support pretty much has not budged. He's lost some people at the margins, particularly in some of the rural areas that have really felt the pinch of the trade war, but his diehard supporters are not budging. And this is why you see very few Republicans willing to openly go against him, because as we saw in the midterms, if you run against Trump, you run into trouble. A lot of Republicans who did not sort of back the president saw themselves losing their seats. So the Republican base probably will latch on to this and dig in even more to defend their president. In many cases, you've seen the Trump presidential campaign fundraising off of this almost immediately. And so it will definitely be galvanizing for the base, but that base is shrinking. President Trump has one of the worst approval ratings of any president at this point in his term.
Now, Ashraf, won't this just fire up the Democratic base too?
It'll definitely help. I'm actually of two minds as to what this does for Biden, because A, it's certainly a feather in Joe Biden's cap that Trump was this worried about him. You know, I was mildly surprised that this was really something that President Trump was taking these extraordinary steps to try to kind of create another Benghazi type sort of scandal cloud over one of his challengers. But there's also some difficult truths in there. At the end of the day, why is Joe Biden's son serving on the board of this massive Ukrainian gas company? I mean, maybe he's eminently qualified, but it's going to look very swampy from the start. So I think it fires up the Democrats. I'm still trying to figure out if it helps or hurts Biden.
Well, the whole Trump strategy, not just with this, but in general, is to kind of sow confusion and doubt and make people question what they think the facts are and that kind of thing. I mean, it's worked quite well for him in the past, and that appears to be what he's doing now.
Yeah, I mean, basically, so far, they're just dismissing it. And there are some serious allegations here that are going to be hard to dismiss. I mean, the cover-up is half the thing in American politics and these investigations, and they're going to have a hard time denying a cover-up based on if any of what's in the whistleblower complaint does bear fruit. Then it looks like extraordinary steps were taken to keep this from the public.
Kimberly?
But, I mean, you could also say the same thing for the Democrats that you might say for the Republicans. The people who are against Trump continue to be against Trump. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and every time I go home to St. Louis, Missouri, in the middle of the United States, far away from the Washington Political Center, no one cares about the Russia investigation. No one cares about these scandals. They care about other issues. And so I don't know that it's going to resonate with people who are checked out of politics and just see this as more noise.
Well, that, in fact, is why poll after poll, again, at least up until now, shows that a majority of Americans have opposed impeachment up to now. So there is sort of a difference between these sort of, you know, these so-called coastal elites, Washington and New York and California and so forth, and people in between, like St. Louis, for example. It's a big difference.
Right, but there was actually a poll out just this morning, I believe it was an NPR Marist poll, that saw those numbers starting to budge a little bit, that there's, you know, a small tick up in support for impeachment. Still not a majority of Americans, because impeachment, as we learned from Clinton and as we learned from other impeachment proceedings, is such a traumatizing event for American politics. It takes up so much time and effort. Side note, the U.S. Congress still has not passed a federal spending deal to fund the federal government past October the 1st. And so these are the things that are not getting done, in addition to gun control legislation, in addition to things on health care or drug pricing. One of the reasons that the American people are very hesitant to support the idea of it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a second. I mean, the world is still spinning and stuff has to get done regardless of what happens here. But before we move on, here's one quote about how people eventually are going to see this. And just let me read this quickly and both of you respond. Here's the quote. If voters see this as being about significant abuses of power and serious attempts to undermine the rule of law, then I don't particularly worry about a backlash against Democrats who vote for impeachment. If Americans see this purely as a partisan exercise, the answer may be different. So it really depends on how all this is perceived across the country.
Right. And again, going back to when President Clinton, Bill Clinton, was impeached, that actually helped him because it was viewed as such a partisan exercise. And so this is one of the reasons that we've seen House Speaker Nancy Pelosi extraordinarily hesitant to back impeachment up until this point.
That's a fantastic point from Kim, is that Nancy Pelosi has been openly hesitant on the record, drawing fire from the more activist wings of her own party for months. You know, so it's a question, you know, of whether she woke up this morning, saw the details and changed her mind, or whether she finally had to cede to the pressure from inside her own party. So she's kind of, you know, in the role of a reluctant prosecutor in this scenario.
Well, without getting too deep into the weeds here, I think one of the things that kind of moved her was there are 30 House districts around the country that are Democrat that were actually won by Trump in 2016. So those members of Congress are really kind of a tough spot. They're Democrats, and yet their district actually voted for Trump. They're mixed districts. So that's kind of a dilemma. But a lot of them in the past week have actually said, well, I think we need to kind of start thinking about impeachment. And that apparently is what did it for her.
Right. And we saw an op-ed from, I believe it was 7 of those Democrats from Trump won districts who were military veterans, who wrote an op-ed, I think it was in the Washington Post, if I'm not mistaken, saying that it was time to move towards impeachment. And yes, there has been more of a shift as more details about this come out that has helped push Pelosi. I also do think that the level of detail and the level of specificity in this whistleblower complaint, and it's clearly somebody with a strong intelligence background, like national security background, who has laid out an extraordinarily detailed case against the president in this whistleblower complaint. And also the fact that the White House tried to intervene to stop that whistleblower complaint from going to Congress, which is the law. I think all of those things played together.
And even Joseph McGuire, the director of National Intelligence, was
acting
on,
director.
Acting
we have
director
lots of acting.
Said on Capitol Hill this week that these allegations he thought were quite credible and they were put together quite carefully. Well, in our remaining minutes here, I did want to ask you both about some other things that Kimberly alluded to. Even as this impeachment battle heats up, the world continues to spin. We've got economic issues to deal with. Foreign policy has to be dealt with as well. First of all, how distracting is something like this for the president, who does have to continue to be the president and do all these other things?
Well, it seems to be all-consuming for him based on his Twitter feed, which is, since we don't really have regular press briefings at the White House anymore, most of the information we get about what the president is thinking comes from his Twitter feed or sort of off-the-cuff statements. There's audio of him speaking to some of his staff members at the UN when he was at the UN, basically saying that the people who talked to this whistleblower, the whistleblower themselves, was acting like a spy and they potentially should face retaliation. So it does seem to be taking up pretty much all of his time.
What do you think, Ashraf?
I was really struck by the comments that Kimberly was talking about yesterday, where he's basically labeling this person a spy and saying, the paraphrase quote is like, you know how we used to deal with people like that. Like, that's not the first time I've heard language that I consider genuinely dangerous from President Trump, but that was like this could get really publicly dangerous. His reactions are very hard to predict.
I mean, when you go to work for the U.S. government, in this case, this person, he or she, the intelligence community, of course, you take an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so this person is being defended by, at least in general, as a patriot who is doing his or her job. And yet the president clearly is kind of at least making a subtle threat against that person.
Which is important because whistleblower law in the United States also protects people who file whistleblower complaints from retaliation. So if there is indeed an action or a perceived action to try to retaliate against the person who has filed this report or this complaint, that could also be a violation of U.S. law.
Now, the president was at the United Nations this week for the General Assembly, the annual gathering of world leaders, and a lot of that has been sort of lost among the American public this week. But he met with a whole bunch of foreign leaders. Iran was a big topic, and he's said in the past that he's willing to meet with Iranian leaders with no preconditions. But President Rouhani, who was also in town in New York this week, said, you have got to ease sanctions first. Where's that heading quickly, Ashraf?
Well, it's the usual sort of President Trump game of negotiation chicken. It seemed to work in very interesting ways with North Korea. Iran is a tougher nut. They've been around the block and they've made more than one American president sort of look outmaneuvered. So I don't know that the Iranians are that worried, because I think they know President Trump has been very clear that he does not want to get into another Middle East war. And so once that's off the table, then we're just talking about economic sanctions, and they did two generations of economic sanctions. They would rather have the sanctions lifted. But in this kind of staring contest, I don't know. They're pretty good at this.
And quickly, Kimberly, the president also said, he gave a big speech to the General Assembly, and he said that globalism is dead. That's one of the big themes that he talked about. It's every nation for itself, apparently. What say you?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that he made this speech at the United Nations, which the sole purpose of the organization is to sort of address issues on the global scale. But it's very much in keeping with the president's strategy for global interactions in general. He's been very sort of isolationist, if I can bring up an old term. He doesn't want multilateral trade deals. He wants one-on-one bilateral trade deals. He's openly disparaged NATO in terms of sort of group military strategies. He actively sort of sat out one of the huge topics at this United Nations General Assembly meeting, which was climate change and trying to address it in face of massive protests here in the United States and, you know, a lot of focus on this globally. And so it's very much in keeping with President Trump's sort of way of interacting with other world leaders. But, you know, he did take sort of a globalist stage to say it.
Well, we'll have to end it right there. Thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Kimberly Adams. She's the correspondent for Marketplace, and Ashraf Khalil of the Associated Press. We hope to see you again. This program was produced by Kim Lewis, our engineer Justin Thwaites. And I'm Paul Brandis of USA Today and West Wing Reports. Thanks for joining us.